This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It's Tuesday, the 28th of June, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. Yesterday, we didn't go live on Facebook, but today we are definitely going live on Facebook. It's Tuesday. That means it is a World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Hey, good morning, Erin. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So we get two quick discussions, quick because we're putting them into this one-hour segment, but also quick because I think it's going to be a fast-paced discussion. The first, we're closing out Pride Month with a discussion with Mr. Daniel Durazzo, Public Affairs Officer at the U.S. Embassy, and Natino Thompson, co-host on the Eye Opener on Guardian Radio on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., and Radical Thinker. And then in the second half of the show, we're having a conversation with Carlisle Bethel and Natino Thompson about Roe v. Wade, the decision in the U.S., and how it impacts Bahamians and the Bahamas. I don't see these conversations as mutually exclusive. I hope you tune in, stay tuned in, so you could follow my thread. But I do have to say greetings, good morning, and happy birthday to Master Christopher Edward Adichina Brave Davis, a.k.a. CJ, a.k.a. John Canoe III. And I bring these greetings on behalf of the Spirit, the greatest John Canoe group in the history of white people, John Canoe, and the whole world. Happy birthday, Master Adichina. Anyway, I send those greetings on behalf of my brother, my brethren, Christopher Davis, who was on Morning Blend this morning. Happy birthday, CJ. Happy birthday. We are glad to be in the world at the same time as you. Morning, Mark.
So good morning. You know, before we get into the whole Pride thing, I noticed something in the papers this morning.
Yeah.
Which got me a little alarmed, right?
Right.
It said NIB report recommends new retirement. This was in the Guardian, newspaper, of course. Recommend new retirement age of 67. I wonder if that is in any way linked to the fact that the funds are running out.
Well, I thought politicians is trying to secure that's job security for politicians. Guaranteed I could do this thing until 67. Can't kick me out till 67.
But they never want to leave, right? So they might as well be 80.
That's not the most interesting thing. That's not the thing that drew my eye first in the paper, just before we get into the discussion. Yeah. The thing that drew my eye first was this beautiful ad. There's a partnership between Margaritaville and, look at that paper dead quick. Margaritaville and Star 105. 106.5 Star Hits, right?
Right.
And it's called Fish Fry Fridays with Visage. And it's looks very exciting. I just want to say to Margaritaville, listen, you got Margaritaville. You got Warren Buffett. You got The Point. You got the first and probably the last light signal to be installed in the capital of the Bahamas.
Working light signal.
Right. Why Fish Fry? Why you won't call it Fish Fry? Don't call it Fish Fry. That's ours. I like it. It's really nice. And when I have guests come to town, I can send them there because it looks classy. It looks like it's going to be safe and it looks like it's going to be fun.
Nice.
Yeah. But why you won't call it Fish Fry? You can't call it. I mean, you could call it what you want because we are family, right? We all here to make money, to grow the country, develop tourism, all of that. Yeah. But you can't have Fish Fry.
So is that appropriation?
I mean, I don't think it's appropriate. I'm not sure if it's appropriation. But listen, we got some guests in the Zoom room waiting on us. I want to get this conversation going. I think it's going to be a great one. Today, Daniel Durazzo and Natino Thompson are joining us to close out Pride Month with this quick discussion. Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Durazzo, Mr. Thompson.
Good morning, Daniel. Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Bahamas.
Good morning. And so I asked Mr. Natino to find a couple of questions, to think up a couple of questions for a quick panel discussion. I wanted to have one more discussion before we closed out Pride Month. And Mr. Thompson did not fail me. He never fails me. He gave me two awesome questions. And sort of like a panel discussion, one of the biggest issues facing the LGBTI or LGBTQIA community in the Bahamas, I think, is a feeling of a lack of inclusion, right? Mm. Like a feeling like I don't belong here, whether people don't want me here or the systems can't tolerate me. Like there's no place for me in the systems. I can't access services that should be available to citizens. I'm made to feel uncomfortable, like excluded in social spaces. And a lot of young people are like, look, I could just work hard somewhere else that at the very least won't penalize me for being visible, won't penalize me for me expressing myself and being seen as who I am, right? Like at this point, most people, they aren't looking for, certainly they're not looking for extra rewards. They're not looking for recognition even. They don't flag that say, look, I'm a great LGBT citizen. They just are tired of being and feeling like they're being penalized for being who they are. And so the two questions, the two issues I want to put to both Mr. Natino and Mr. Durazzo this morning. Mr. Durazzo, are you there? All right.
Yes, indeed, I'm right here.
Awesome. Our questions about access to state and social institutions for a better quality of life and asylum and the asylum process. I also think that this conversation extends beyond the LGBTQIA community. And I think the issues on the table extend into society as a whole and address the exodus of young people, the cause of the brain drain, and the disappearance of community and culture.
Is there like a LGBTQIA scale? You know, like you have these freedom scale, which countries are more freer. Is there like a scale that can tell somebody in that community whether that, which, you know, how well those countries rank?
Natino, Daniel?
I'm not aware of a specific or official scale, although I wouldn't be surprised if there are civil society organizations out there who have tried to sort of create some kind of a guideline in that way to help inform LGBTQI persons making decisions on where they want to travel or where they want to live. I think that would probably be very, very useful for that community if such a scale were available. And I think sort of the question that you mentioned, Aaron, about inclusion, there's a lot to unpack there. Like you said, what exactly does it mean to be included and to have access to services? Is it enough for those services to be kind of guaranteed by law? Is there sort of a cultural shift that needs to take place? Do both of those things have to happen together? Does one come before the other one? These are the kinds of questions that I think ultimately the embassy is really encouraged to hear, kind of to hear about. And I'm really curious to hear Natino's thoughts on that. One of my goals today was to really kind of be in listening mode and really listen to mm-hmm. Natino and to you and to any other guests who participate in the conversation on what these questions mean here in the Bahamas. So I'm curious to hear what you think about that, Natino.
In a paper that I had just finished writing, I documented the UN Refugee Agency documented that 1,260 Bahamians sought asylum in Canada, right? Within the past 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. There were 295 persons who sought asylum, Bahamians who sought asylum in 2018, 420 persons in 2019, and 545 persons from the Bahamas who sought asylum in Canada in 2020. That does not include the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at these numbers, right, and again, that's from the UNHCR, when we look at these numbers, it screams a mass exodus, right? Mm-hmm. Especially for a population of 400,000, we're now conducting the census.
And I was going to say, yeah, those are big numbers.
Those are big numbers, right? Mm-hmm. We're conducting the census. The census should bring us up to about maybe 420,000, 430,000, 440. We know that the Bahamas is growing. We grow slow because we're not having as much children, Bahamians, that is, right? We know that the largest group of persons having children would be people of Haitian descent. And we know the xenophobia that exists around that around that group of marginalized people. But one of the things that I noted was the former AG's comments, right, in the essay, that when the comments were made about Bahamians seeking asylum based on the basis of homophobia experience in the Bahamas, Kyle Beffel said that he did not know the extent of the refugee population who left. And he said there's not a concern about the increase in numbers because the government at the time, the Minister administration, had no knowledge of what are being called, and they put in quotation marks, Bahamians seeking refuge. Mm-hmm. And this kind of apathy or this kind of indifference towards those numbers, like if I was just talking with Alexis and we were remarking, if like my friend actually took a weekend trip to Canada and he said, Natino, everybody who was my friend here in the queer community has literally moved to Canada. Okay. And he's so, like, so soon wow. There's going to be like a little Bahamas there.
Okay.
And sorry.
Wow. Now, when you were speaking just now, I thought to myself, that feeling, that sense of urgency, like to leave or that people are leaving and the sense of urgency to pay attention to it. I was not just thinking about LGBT people. I really thought about tons of young people I know who are not queer in any way, they're not bi-curious, who are sort of expressing the same thing. Not that, oh, all my friends are in Canada, but I got to get out of here. There's nothing left for me here. Is it fair to say that this is something that more than the LGBT community is experiencing, A, and B, is it fair to say that governments and social systems are generally apathetic towards young people and what they into? Like, they don't care what they into. You depressed, go find Jesus. Or you feel restless, feel anxious, you need to work more, you need a harder job. I find that older generations display that apathy or practice that apathy towards all young people, not just queer people.
So when I think, so for me, this is one of the things. So Bell Hooks has an interesting kind of conception of queerness, right? Mm-hmm. And Bell Hooks' idea of queerness is queer is not about who you're having sex with, which can be a dimension of it, but queer as being the self that is at odds with everything around it and has to invent and create and find a place to speak and thrive and live from.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and so
go on.
And so when I'm talking about queerness in particular, I think that those people you're talking about embody queerness in that they're trying to find, even if they're not, their sexual orientation is not queer, they are trying to find a place where they can call home or that feels like home. Mm-hmm. And so I acknowledge that. I know a lot of straight Bahamians who have left the Bahamas because they too are of this idea that the Bahamas is not giving them the quality of life that they deserve. And that is an indictment on this government, on the way of government, on successive government. This is not just a PLP or an FNM thing. This is the way that we do governance in the Bahamas. There's something terribly problematic and wrong with it. And unless we're willing to address it, what we will continue to see is that the best and brightest minds will not come back to this place because this place cannot, it doesn't have the infrastructure, it doesn't have the ability to hold futures, And therefore, as a result, people have to leave. I'm going to be honest with you. I have been at the crossroads of at the crux of thinking of whether or not to just pack up my advocacy and leave. I watch this. That's always on the table for me, because my future needs to be secure. And the truth of the matter is, I exist in a space that will not even recognize, like, the stuff that I'm doing and talking about cutting edge stuff, you know.
Yep.
And it cannot be received in this environment, which means that this environment will choke the life out of me. And I cannot afford for that to happen.
I got you.
Before that even, and so this is like, this is a dire situation, because unless we're willing to address the patterns of governance that have led to this mass amount of exodus, right, by both straight and queer people, the Bahamas is in for a rude awakening, because on top of facing climate change, right,
mm-hmm.
we're now having people just leaving because there are other spaces that will appreciate and give them the quality of life that they deserve.
And listen, that is a valid psychosocial issue. Like I tell you, the old people can say, listen, you could pray about it, you know, Jesus will help you endure. And they're not being disgusting or trivial. That is the solution that they feel is most effective, right? Or most powerful. I can say, look here, I need a husband and a wife to be able to summers. And that's so that they'll have somebody to talk to, right? Because I could be really, my life, I'm married to misery. But that's what I can need to stay here. I'll need a husband and a wife. And I don't know if the Bahamas will tolerate that. And there are very many reasons why people leave. We're just talking about that psychosocial aspect. We haven't talked about the medical refugees, right? We haven't talked about the people who have invested in academia, have invested in skills building to the point where they can create industry, but cannot rely on the public sector government, the private sector business, mm-hmm. Civil society, and organizations like Chamber of Commerce to organize spaces for the real growth of industry, right? To help carve out channels for young people to now be able to move into these spaces. And like I was talking about yesterday, there are some problems that people cannot solve on their own. And in the absence of a response to people's demand for assistance, for guidance, young people are going to leave. Young people, you think it's just young people. There are older Bahamians, my age and older, who have been working on their plan for a decade, and they're leaving.
And, you know, not all of them are leaving. They're just not coming back. Because Kieran from Intel Chase was telling me that five people who went to university, right? To mm-hmm. his five Bahamians at his college, I forget which one it was, he was the only one that came back.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of economic drivers. Now, for Natino, I mean, how much of this is economic, this migration, or how much is it to do with persecution?
Listen, that's the music. Let's go to this break quickly. When we come back from the break, Mr. Durazo, if we could just talk about asylum briefly, and then we're going to transition into the next segment. I know you have to go. So you guys stay tuned. Hold on. We're coming right back. You're on the clock. Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
The most important thing in life is family. And whenever you need reliable advice, you look to the people you know you can trust. At Jay Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we earn our clients' trust every day. Whether it's home, motor, travel, or commercial insurance, we've got you covered. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
JSC, 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 Johnson Insurance.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock of Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
Hello? Can you show you something else, boy?
Who this is? Tamika?
You ain't even remember my name?
Wow, Dred. Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning your trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine, because you two like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Good. because you got to get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I see her hiding that under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO, WHO, Canada, and USAID.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning. Welcome back. Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green, and let's get right back into it. First of all, Mr. Thompson, Natino Thompson, listen, the passion. But it is the urgency that many people feel. That's the energy that people struggle on a daily basis when they are deciding whether to stay or to go. And with every step they make, it's a decision. Am I staying? Am I going? How much energy do I put into this place when ultimately I feel like I have to leave? And it's that passion, hopefully, that pulls people together and makes them realize that there are others out there. Mr. Durazzo. Morning. Okay, just very quickly, when Mr. Palmer asked the initial question, is there like an index, an LGBTI index? I know that organizations like HRC, Human Rights Campaign, and the ACLU, and another of other organizations do create and manage indexes. Like there's an LGBTI corporate index in the U.S. that gives a ranking of major corporations and their inclusivity, their recognition of the need of diversity, protection for LGBT staff. The question I have is, how can civil society and governments work together? In particular, how can like civil society and the U.S. and Bahamian governments work together to ensure greater access to social and state institutions to avoid, right, so that we could sort of have a safety net or a barrier, a safety net to catch people who feel like they have to fall into asylum as their last choice?
I think ultimately that's a complex process, and it takes time to sort of build up that capacity to fully address the needs of the different populations in a particular country, especially, you know, a population with that has historically been at a disadvantage, like the LGBTQI community has in many parts of the world. I think ultimately the process has to start with conversations. It has to start with people in government, decision makers, people who provide services. That may include, in some instances, the private sector when we're talking about medical services or other kinds of services. Having these honest and open and direct conversations with members of the LGBTQI community or people in the LGBTQI community who are willing and able to sort of represent their community to the best of their ability, to understand what those needs are and to understand where the gaps are. I think so much of what is often lacking in terms of services and in terms of inclusion is a question of ignorance, whether willful or more innocent ignorance. It's ignorance on some level. And I think that conversations, proactive conversations that are not just about letting people vent their grievances, but actually listening to what their needs are so that those services can be provided in a more equitable, inclusive fashion. I think that on some level has to be the starting point. And I know that's part of what I have tried to do, and what we have tried to do at the embassy is to help foster some of those conversations, to create opportunities for decision makers to hear from the LGBTQI community. Certainly, we're not the only ones doing that. And I know that the LGBTQI community, one thing's become clear to me over the past couple of years is that the LGBTQI community here most certainly has a voice. There are very outspoken, passionate members, you and Natino being just two of them. And I think I think, and I hope that the decision makers continue to listen to you, better, and are able to take those things, truly take those things on board, and help improve some of the services that are currently, you know, not really inclusive of that community.
And I think at the end of the day, what we will find is that improving the services with the initial aim of providing greater access for LGBTI people actually provides greater access for everyone, right? And
I think you're right. I think, and that's one of the arguments behind inclusion as a whole, is that by securing the rights of, you know, groups like LGBTQI persons, we are improving services for everyone, not just for them. It's about equal access, not special access, right?
Absolutely. I would love, one of the things I was thinking about, it would be great if maybe at the country level, the Bahamas, or at the regional level with organizations like Carry Flags and ICADE, CAISO in Trinidad, and organizations in Belize, UNIBAM and Caleb Orozco, that maybe we can partner with U.S. civil society organizations like Human Rights Campaign, ACLU, to create a regional index, but not just an index, because an index is, you know, it's just a grading system, but with a support mechanism to help countries improve in particular areas, right? And see, the tool can be useful for us as a tourism destination, whether the Bahamas or the region as a whole. And with good scores, we can become more attractive as a tourism product. But we're not seeking to penalize countries that are scoring low. We're seeking to identify areas that need support and give these countries the support. Like I say, we're not, queer people aren't trying to penalize straight people, you know, or punish them. We are trying to find systems that improve the entire country, the entire community, so everybody wins. They don't have to label themselves. Just, we're here, and that means that we can participate.
I think that's a great way to look at it.
Absolutely. Daniel, can you tell people where they can go to seek clarification or specific instructions or protocols on the asylum process?
Certainly. If you do a Google search for U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the acronym for sort of for the agency that handles asylum process in the States, that's USCIS, and type in asylum claim, that'll take you to a page that provides some guidance on that process as a whole. I think ultimately for many people, depending on their circumstances and their ability to secure sort of assistance, the help of a good, you know, immigration or asylum attorney, whether that's somebody that you're able to hire or a pro bono organization that does this work for as a service to the community. I think just simply because everybody's situation is often very different and very complex, sort of the general process can only take you so far, right? At some point, you need a little bit of help to go through the process specifically. And I have to, you know, confess, I'm not an expert on the asylum process myself, but I do know that ultimately applying for asylum for LGBTQI persons is similar to the asylum process for any other kind of what's called a protected status, for which you can seek asylum, which basically means that because of who you are, whether that's race, whether that's sexual orientation, religion, and there's a few sort of other categories, if you believe that you are in danger of persecution in your home country for that reason, then you may qualify for asylum in the United States, and you go through that process. You have to go through a series of interviews to sort of determine sort of different aspects of that asylum claim. Okay. So the process is complex. It's not necessarily an easy one, and that's why I think ultimately it's sort of the recommendation, if you want really specific advice on that process, is to find an expert who can help advise you on that.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Mr. Durazo. I've got one call. They've been hanging on that line for a long time. One caller, you're on the clock. Good morning, caller. I am sorry that we lost you. That is my bad. Mr. Durazo, thank you again. And I hope that we can put on another quick panel like this in the very near future. LGBTQIA pride, other human rights issues that would desire the same spotlight. I think it would be a great conversation. Thank you again for joining me.
Thank you, Erin. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and very much looking forward to having more conversations. I really do believe on a fundamental level that listening to each other, learning about each other's different perspectives is the way forward on any complex issue that we have to solve together. So always appreciate the opportunity to be a part of that on your show.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I think what rang through was that these issues, the issues that die are urgent to the LGBT community, other young people, other people are also facing these issues, and mm-hmm. a solution for one group can be a solution for all groups or lead us in the right. Mr. Thompson.
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Thank you for your passion in that segment.
Well, no problem. I wanted to go back and actually answer the question. I think the guest in the studio was talking about, I can't remember his name. He asked how much of that is economic. I was reading a paper about quantum politics, right? And it's this idea, or it's the politics of time, right? Mm-hmm. And this is obviously an American author, but they were discussing how governments are in control of time, right? And in a neoliberalized economy, or in an era of neoliberalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is fundamentally tied to American imperialism, you have these ideas of science and technology that outpace the government's ability to create, I guess, and maintain the structures,
policies, and
that,
systems
that meet the needs of their citizens.
Uh-huh.
And when you have technology outpacing government's response to disasters, to and the laws are lagging behind.
Yeah.
In the case of the Bahamas and other countries, what you begin to see is the deficiencies within government, that governments are unable to keep up with the fast moving pace of science, of technology, and all these other economic shifts that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to say that all of it is economic, because in a neoliberalized era or system, the economy is, or the economic state of affairs is at the forefront of our lives. Watch this. If you're not able to make money, the quality of your life is going to be severely diminished. Right?
You can
and
go
when
to
you're
jail.
Talking about access to social institutions, like money is important. Like while I believe that money is a social construct, right? It's important. You can't ignore the realities and the concreteness of it.
We are not in the age of Aquarius. We are in the age of accounting. We are in the age of economics. You can't do anything without money. In fact, they call Jesus Christ liberation theology to this liberation theology. But in the liberation theology, it's like you could go to jail for not having any money. You could go to jail for not being able to make money, even through no fault of your own, right?
But watch this. Watch this. So I love that you bring that up, because that right there is key. Because watch this. The fact that you are unable to make money, if the law lags behind, the law will say that you transgressed it, even though it's outdated and it can no longer fit the time.
Yep.
Which still means that you have to incur the debt, right? Of paying. Yeah. And so, yes.
Okay. I heard another voice in the background. Mr. Carlisle Bethel, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good, thank you. Now, listen, I didn't necessarily want to drag you into the LGBTQIA conversation, but I think now is a great time for you to jump in, because now we're talking, I mean, you could talk about anything, but now we're talking politics. Good morning. Mm-hmm. Introduce yourself to the people.
Good morning. My name is Carlisle Bethel. I'm pretty involved on the financial side of things and the financial services.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like to call my area of expertise.
Yes, yes.
I am by no means an expert as in the area as you and Latino, but I think it's an important conversation to have.
Well, listen, if anybody has a finger on the pulse of young professionals in the space this morning, it's certainly you. is what we've been saying ringing true, right? Are you hearing and feeling the same sentiments from your peers, from young people that are looking to you and colleagues who are looking to you for guidance? You know, are people feeling like there's a lack of inclusion in the Bahamas, and that they are desperate, like they desperately have to leave to be able to continue maturing and developing their lives?
Yeah, in many aspects of how we live in the Bahamas, there's a great frustration in regards to the lack of progressive policymaking and the lack of solutions to problems that have been around for decades. When I read some books about the times of Stalinden and Sasso and issues that they are dealing with, I wonder if we are living in those times, because the issues are still around.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I've learned is that anything man-made can be changed. And so there's either this lack of will to make the decision. And I think what we see today, which is the most distressing and concerning for me, is the refusal to kind of have honest, respectful discussions about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
People come from different walks of life and have different beliefs and views. But we can't say, I believe this, thus you must do that.
Mm-hmm.
A discussion, a sensible, mature, respectful discussion about these things. And there is some space in the middle where we can find common ground and consensus. That's what humanity has always done. It's allowed us to progress. And that's important, because if you look 100 years ago, 200 years ago, there are things that was commonly accepted in society that is no longer accepted today.
Mm-hmm.
Because society progresses, but it progresses when we decide to listen and to find some common ground, respect and love.
Yes, absolutely. Like child marriage, that's one of those issues that we just are saying we're not tolerating it.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that it's happening, but we're still not tolerating it, and we're working to end it. You know, thank you very much. While you were speaking, it reminded me of something that Perry G. Christie, the former prime minister, said in his in the lead up to the 2016 referendum, when the question of whether a same-sex marriage ban should be entrenched, right? Christie said at the time, we do not think this is a decision for us to make for future Bahamians, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that regardless of the subject matter at hand, that principle, that thought was so refreshing to hear that there are members of the 70 gang that understand the obligation to share power, like in the way that understanding that when you're making a decision today, that it fundamentally and directly impacts the future in a way that they can't change it, right? Like they may be able to make some changes, sure, but you have done something, you have caused something for them. And the question is, do you have the right to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you said, Carlisle, was so liberational, if I could make up a word right there.
No, I understand completely where you're going.
All right. So I've invited you men in the room with me today, the last part of this discussion. We have about 10 minutes left. I invited you in the room to talk about the decision in the U.S. made just last week on Roe v. Wade. And I've invited you three men because I think you are three men who, if I had to speak on behalf of all the people with wombs, that I would trust these three men to come into the room and join the conversation, right? I feel comfortable with these three men sharing their opinions in a space talking about things that impact women primarily, right? And then impact men also very, very deeply.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that really surprised me is that there was a recent Pew survey which actually showed that 61% of Americans wanted access to abortion in almost all cases. I mean, it was more nuanced than that. Only 37% didn't want access in most cases. So there is clearly a democratic need for, you know, for access to abortion. And that was what I found so shocking about that judgment, because now U.S. joins, guess who? Russia, mm-hmm. North Korea, and mm-hmm. Iran as the only countries in the world that are reducing access to abortions.
Right, right. U.S. becomes one of only four countries to remove protections for legal abortion in 25-plus years. So, gentlemen, this is the hot-button question. Now, I do not know what you are on the matter. And that's not why I asked you here. I asked you because I feel like no matter what your position is on the matter, you can engage the conversation in a way that is supportive and helpful and not divisive or destructive. But I want to ask you guys a couple of hot questions as we get into the discussion. If you had to choose between these four, would you be pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-choice, or pro-life?
What does actually pro-life mean? That's my first question. Can anyone answer that?
Man, I tried asking the teacher if she could clarify that multiple choice, you know, and she tried to give me an F. But pro-life, I think pro-life means something different to many people, right? Pro-life, like this, if we take it back to the U.S. discussion, pro-life means you can't have an abortion.
Right. And then we won't give you any services to help you once you have your child.
Yeah. Well, and then we find that in those spaces, in those jurisdictions that tend to be pro-life or, you know, anti-abortion, that the concern for the child at the advocacy and political level ends at that stage, right? There doesn't seem to be concern for access to education, access to housing, access to medical care, safe communities, right? Like, and we see this in the adoption and foster care system in the U.S. and the official and anecdotal stories that pop up out of it.
Well, I think I would have to be pro-choice. And, you know, it's like all principles. When you see people, what I'm seeing at the moment is that people have, they don't have basic principles. For on the one side, they may say, oh, you've got to take this medical intervention, mm-hmm. right, which we in the past. And then on the other hand, they're saying, oh, a woman should have a choice, have her choice to do what she wants. Mm-hmm. You can't have both. If you're going to have a principle, you're going to have a principle that is inclusive of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I find that the two sides, you know, when you look at the polarization of the sides, they want freedom on one side, but they don't want freedom on the other side, which is like really strange. So if you were to ask me, I would be pro-choice.
All right. Natino?
I'm definitely pro-choice. definitely pro-choice. I just believe that women should have right. Women or people with uteruses, persons with uteruses should have control over their bodies. I mean, unless you are in that body and you know how difficult it is to deal with all of the hormonal imbalances, and everything that comes, the periods and all of those other complications that go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think we should be legislating other people's bodies, especially when you have no experience of that, of what it means to be in a body like that. And I think that this is... This is part and parcel of the same kind of issues that LGBT+ people face, right?
Mm-hmm.
When people who are experiencing these issues speak up and say that this conversation is very nuanced, as the guest was saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm raped or if incest happens and that was not something and that happened to me while I was young, I should not be made to bear those decisions. Should I choose not to? If I choose to keep the child, then that, you know, I mean, that's on me. But if I choose not to, that those choices need to be available.
I
think like taking those away, just like it's inhumane. It's an injustice to people who deal with these issues and that's their lived experience.
Absolutely, so, yeah. Carlisle.
Yeah, I'm definitely pro-choice, but I do believe, you know, as a man. I'm not a leading voice on this, but that does not, but I do have a role to play as a support. And I think a lot of times men in general forget that we have a part to play in supporting women with these very important issues. Mm-hmm. And again, I think this is a prime example of this polarized discussion, right? It's like you're either for this or you're against this, or you either love this or you hate this. You're hard, you're cold, you're black, you're white. But it there is a large gray area in the middle, and there's a large and like Natino just pointed out, there's a number of issues that are tied up and wrapped in this discussion of abortion and why people terminate pregnancies. Mm-hmm. It's a medical procedure for a number of reasons. There's death involved, there's circumstances involved. And I think to outright say no or outright say yes, it forces people to sides, to pick sides and to dig their heels in. But I think if we can find it was mentioned previously, what are our basic set of principles? What are the basic things, the rules that we can all agree on that allows us to play to come together as a community, as a country, and live together, right? In basketball, you have a set of rules that you go outside these lines, the ball is out. You know, there are a set of rules and guidelines that we all can agree on. That's home base.
Yeah.
And I think right now when we have these discussions, we forget where the home base is and what the guidelines are. And if it's freedom for people, if it's equal rights, if it's the ability to access and to make decisions for your own body, once they don't infringe on other people's rights, then I think we have to set those rules and guidelines and then have the discussion within those rules that we all can agree on.
Thank you very much, Carlisle. And I think, you know, jumping back to our earlier discussion, ensuring in these processes, right, because this is a communal and a national process of reconciliation, right, that at periods in time we stop and recognize the newest generation of Bahamians and we include them in determining and setting that baseline, you know, like you said. So we're almost out of time, and I got about 8 texts to read, guys. I am pro-life primarily and pro-choice equally, right? And so I promote creating an environment where women are less likely to want to have an environment. I mean, an abortion, mm-hmm. right? Correct. Creating an environment where people are less likely to want to have an abortion, but understanding that it is a choice that you cannot make for another person. And if you do, you have to be prepared to take on the financial, psychological, legal, spiritual, and emotional health and raising of that child. Children cry.
You know, that's a very, very great point. Sorry to jump in, but yeah. I want to catch before you shift topics. But that idea, that point of making it less, creating an environment that makes it less desirable to get an abortion. I think that's very, very, that's a very, very important point.
Absolutely. Children cry, but yet they come. Okay, guys, I got to read this, and then I have 8,500 things y'all cause me to want to respond to. Okay, let's get to the text. 67 means more contribution, and most may die after 67, so it cuts payout time short for NIB. You know what? Pay cuts. If people take pay cuts. Aaron, stop trying to put old people against young people. Us old people struggling to live here too. Who keep fighting for better. We have it hard here too. Yeah, but you've had it longer here too. And you've had an opportunity to change. You've had more time to affect change. And we get it. Don't watch nothing. We ain't leaving out the 3 Score and 10 gang. Scared of pinches. We ain't. But that's it, ageism, right? And people, that's a part of the tension. The older people are struggling as well. Okay, this is hard to ask, and I'm not sure if it's correct even. I got you. There are no hospitals for the LGBT community to access. There's barely any health. And see, this is it. There's barely any health services. I hope Mr. Durazo and others would act as a bridge between the U.S. and Bahamian government to rectify this dilemma. Right, perhaps we can partner to create specific services for LGBTI people while ensuring that same service is provided to the broader community. Reforming laws does not make it one of four nations in the world where abortions are legal. There are many nations with such laws. No, it says the U.S. became one of only four countries to remove protections. Those other countries, they
were... Yeah, there's 21 other countries.
Right, they were always like, yeah, we're not ever doing this. The U.S. went forward and said, hey, ladies, you're free. And then they turned around and said, we lied. Sorry, that was a trick. Another text. Morning, Ms. Green. Dear texter, I read your text. We're going to get into that. I am all out of time. To the person on the phone, I cannot get to you. I am sorry. Producer, thank you for playing that music. I got to shut myself off. We're off the clock. But you stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Thank you, Mr. Mark Palmer.
You're very welcome.
Thank you much. Thank you, producer. Let it rip. Have a great day, Bahamas.